Blog Talk Radio.
How did the Falcons do in the draft? This and more on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. And that's right, do not adjust your dial. It is time for the Impact Media's End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio and, of course, Impact Media for allowing us to come on here and talk NFL and Atlanta Falcons. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, and once again, do not adjust your dials. I am joined by two mysterious people who have been absent and gotten a lot of calls and tweets and texts wondering where you guys were at. But great to have you guys back, the coach Haywood Hill and the King ATLian Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy. Glad to be back.
Doing great, Jeremy. A long time.
It has been a long time, especially for you, Coach. We had Reggie on a couple weeks ago, and Reggie, I was going to send out a search party because we weren't sure at first if you were going to be able to make it today. I thought maybe you didn't make it out of Vegas.
Yeah, I wasn't supposed to make it early, but I took a later flight out on Sunday and got a chance to hang out with Julio, Roddy, and Harry Douglas were on the flight with me. So we'll talk about some of the interesting conversation behind the scenes. But yeah, I did make it back.
And we are glad you made it back. And apparently, you have my dumb luck as far as being on a good flight.
Right, it was very surprising to meet some of the guys that I got a chance. Odell Beckham Jr. got a chance to chop it up with him a little bit and get his thoughts on a few things. So it was a good trip, man. I enjoyed it.
Maybe I will have that luck as I will actually be on my first airplane trip coming up on Wednesday, taking a little vacation up to my wife's family up in Chicago. So I'm hoping maybe to meet some fun people on that flight.
Oh, man, if not, let me know. We'll talk back channel. I've got some guys up in Chicago that can introduce you to some really interesting guys.
I may have to hit you up on that because I'm going to have some free time up there.
Yeah, definitely.
But we will jump right into this because we're going to do our best to get everybody in and out in an hour, you know, just like Domino's used to do. If we can't deliver in less than an hour, then it's free. Of course, if you are paying for this right now, we appreciate it. And we'll have to get with the accountant on where that money's actually going because I haven't seen it. Have you?
Oh, I've not seen anything. I was just about to be behind the scenes and find out where I need to come meet you to get mine.
Right. Hey, you know, maybe I'll have to check the receipts on that Las Vegas trip. But as far as somebody who maybe we should start checking receipts on, let's jump into some draft highlights. And for the most part, everything was pretty straightforward. We're just going to kind of go with some of the picks we liked, we didn't like, maybe the ones that were a little entertaining or kind of a wait and see. First off the ballot, for sure, the worst-kept secret in the NFL by far is Tampa Bay selecting Winston number one, and he actually signed a four-year, $25.35 million deal, I believe within 24 hours of getting picked, which I think is the fastest I've ever seen. And that included a $16.69 million signing bonus.
Yeah, I thought it was it was the obvious pick that they should have made. Anything else would have been asinine. And I think they got them a good player. I'm not too happy for my guys on that side because we got to see two great mobile quarterbacks a year, twice a year. But it was something that they needed to do. I think they chose the right guy. Lovie Smith's the guy that can turn him into that NFL caliber quarterback.
For myself, I think that it was a great pick for Tampa. It was a great pick for the state of Florida because now not only do you have James Winston there from Florida, you also have all the Miami Hurricanes, all the Florida Gators. You have that Florida connection. And I think Tampa was a great fit for him. They needed a quarterback. They found it within the state. Lovie Smith comes in as that type of coach that he will respect, he will follow, he will listen to, and more importantly, he'll be productive on this. I like to pick the Tampa.
Yeah, and Reggie, I know you know we're going to try to get Coach out to some more games this year if his schedule permits, because I think he's actually busier than both of us. But maybe we can get with Mark and Chris with the ATL Falcoholics and maybe have some crab legs on that Tampa Bay game.
Yeah, that would be a good idea, and they'd definitely be good with it.
That would definitely be it. That would definitely be one not to miss if they have crab legs down there, because everything else they make is unbelievable. But number two, go ahead.
No, I was just concurring.
But of course, number two off the board in what to me was part two of the worst kept secret in the NFL, and part three obviously being Fowler to Jacksonville. Much to the dismay of the Jaguars hangout I was at, they actually wanted Amari Cooper, but that's a better topic for Monday's Jaguars Zone. But Marcus Mariota ends up going to Tennessee. There was absolutely no deals. Apparently, the price was just too high. And what I'm interested for is that Mariota's game and what the Titans have done recently are almost polar opposites. So unless they pull what Washington did with RG3 and start incorporating some of that Oregon offense from his previous couple seasons, I'm not sure what this team's going to do.
Well, I mean, that was the move again. That was the move that Tennessee needed to make. I mean, the last two guys that they've drafted, Locker is gone, and then I forget the last kid's name. Zach Mettenberger, I think, was another guy they had there.
Yes.
I mean, they just weren't getting it done. And you got to sell tickets, man, and this guy's going to fill the stands if nothing else. I just don't know if he has the weapons he needs in Tennessee to make it happen. Obviously, them having Dick LeBeau now as their defensive coordinator is going to help, because defensively they should be a lot better. But I think they still need some more pieces on the offensive side to kind of maximize on Mariota's skill set.
Yeah, I think that I'm actually a little shocked that Tennessee didn't trade out of the pick. I think Cleveland was offering a huge deal for them and picking twice in the first round. And again, they had a future pick coming next year. So it's quite interesting that they stuck with their guns with Mariota, but now the question is you know, what do you load this gun for? Because of the offense he's coming from and into the pros, how he transitions, is going to be the question now. I thought Philly was going to make a strong presence to try to pull him over. It had been a natural fit for him with a smaller learning curve. But now, what is Tennessee saying? They're saying they're about to revamp that whole organization from a standpoint of offense, defense, and a franchise player. So it's going to be real interesting to see what they do with this and how Mr. Mariota fits in all of this vast scheme of things.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And we kind of went over some of them there, the trades that never were, which is kind of the next thing we're going to get into. For the most part, Phillip Rivers is still a Charger. Drew Brees is still in New Orleans. And as far as I know, everybody that was a Philadelphia Eagle is still a Philadelphia Eagle, but you never know, knowing Chip Kelly.
Right, and they're already saying that this guy's still not done. I don't know what that means, but they're saying he's still not done. So one thing I can say about the Philadelphia organization, they gave that guy carte blanche, and as a coach, you got to be thrilled about that.
Yeah, and we'll go ahead and jump right into the other Chip Kelly thing we were going to talk about, and that is Chip Kelly says that he signed Tim Tebow so that he would have four – quality options at finding his guy for quarterback. And Mark Sanchez seems to believe that Tebow is just there as a camp arm until Sam Bradford is back from injury.
Huh. Well, I think it's low risk, high reward with Tim Tebow. I mean, the guy does win, and for whatever reasons, we talk about his mechanics and all of that stuff. But, you know, everywhere he's gone, he's shown the ability to win. He definitely can run that up-pace, that up-tempo offense that Chip Kelly has. I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Tebow as a starter, personally.
Wow. That's huge, is it? But I agree. I think that what people fail to realize is that Chip Kelly doesn't need a quarterback with a big arm. Because of the way the offense is structured, with the rerun options in it, and with the spread, it gives quarterbacks a lot of options, and it forces defenses to be stretched thin so that you can't pass rush like you want to. Now, what has to happen now, and what you saw in this draft, is you started to see a lot of hybrids from what I would consider undersized defensive ends moving to outside linebackers. So you see an inside linebacker. You're starting to see a lot of linebackers being picked up as a result of this spread offense. So, again, do not take Tim Tebow out of this equation just because Bradford's there. And the reason why I say this is because, remember, this offense requires you to have some athleticism with the ability to run. And now when you put Bradford in that situation, how does that fit? You know, you got Mariota who's out there doing the same thing. You're starting to see a lot of this coming back. So I would not take Tim Tebow out of this equation. He will go into camp and compete. And don't be too surprised if he makes his roster.
Yeah, and I'll throw in another tidbit in a second, but I don't understand why Chip Kelly didn't go after Kevin Cobb, who was the king of the dunk and dink offense. You know, he's the king of the 5-yard passes. But the other thing I heard, the wild rumor, and it was a funny rumor, I believe Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk actually mentioned it, and he kind of means it as a joke, but in a way there's a lot of truth. If things don't work out in Philadelphia and Tennessee kind of goes south as well, what is the likelihood that you guys think that Chip Kelly could be the new head coach in Tennessee and get Mariota anyway?
Ooh. I mean, anything's possible. And maybe that's what he's playing for. I think that he'd get basically ostracized or castrated by those Philadelphia Eagle fans for getting rid of McCoy. He made some really big moves to that franchise to make that type of move. I would be surprised if that's what he was playing for. But anything's possible.
I agree. I think anything is possible. I think it's highly doubtful, though. Going back just to piggyback off what you just said, Reginald, I think he made some very serious moves in Philadelphia. And to just all of a sudden exit stage left would say a lot about some things that happened as a result of some players being traded and or released from that organization.
Yeah, I really don't put – I mean, it's one of those statements that you kind of want to start laughing about, but then it starts to click in that it actually could happen. So, I don't know, we'll just have to check out and wait and see on that one. We'll kind of hit some of these other ones really quickly because there's a big one – or two big ones that I really want to get to in a minute. Oakland released wide receiver James Jones. As me and you were talking about a little earlier today, Coach, I don't really see this as a surprising move. They did draft Amari Cooper, and James Jones is kind of just odd man out.
Yeah, that was that was to be expected. They also picked up Michael Crabtree in the free agency market, and so you know James Jones just. It was what it was, right? Amari Cooper, I think, was the guy that they were going to have Reggie McKenzie, and I'll allow Coach Hill to talk because he knows that guy, you know, personally. But I think that was the guy that they were targeting all along.
Yeah, I agree, Reggie. I think that's where they were going. They knew that the kid from West Virginia, Kevin White, would be off the board, and the next best thing would be Amari Cooper. They needed some weapons out there for the quarterback to throw to. They needed some guys that could stretch the field. They found that in Amari Cooper. He also is very polished. I mean, he still has room to grow, but he's ready to plug and play now. And adding Crabtree to that mix only enhanced what they'll be able to do offensively now. So for Jones, I mean, it's a business that you understand is that type of business. And one of the things that a lot of the veteran skill players have to look at now is the fact that they can extend rookie contracts now. It's not like linemen. You know, there's a lot of skill guys out there. And this draft offered a lot. It's just one of the best drafts I've seen probably in the last 5 years as far as the talent pool was concerned. And what I want to add to that is that it was so many guys. I'm talking about inches from being drafted. That's how tight this draft really was this year. And the way that you monitor that and the way that you can tell that is because in the first round, no moves were made. And normally you have two or three teams that are shift up or back for position. And this year, it didn't matter who you picked. Those first 32 picks were going to be good picks anyway.
Right, right. This was definitely a very deep draft. And teams got a chance to really kind of sit back and kind of pick and choose who they wanted to who they wanted to go after. So I was pleasantly pleased with my particular team's draft, and I know we'll get into that in the next half.
Right, and we kind of skipped over that. We'll jump back into that real quickly. Is there one or two players? Because I know there's two I'm going to mention here that I really thought were great picks, and it's the ones I really like in this draft. And the first one is Brett Hundley, I believe in the fifth round to Green Bay. He was my favorite quarterback coming into this draft, and I think that was a steal to grab him that low so he can learn under Aaron Rodgers just in case, or in case you want to move Rodgers somewhere down the road. And then the other one was Carolina picking up Devin Funchess, the wide receiver tight end from Michigan. That gives them the two-headed attack between Greg Olsen and Funchess up the middle, and it's just – I really – if you just run that, those two – and their outside receiver, which his name escapes me, it's going to be really hard for the NFC South. I don't think either of the other three secondaries can cover those three guys.
Well, and I think even with Atlanta's draft specifically, I mean, you saw a lot of a couple of cornerbacks, big corners get picked up. There are some guys that are being moved around. They obviously got Jarrett from Clemson, who I think was a steal in the draft for where they got him. He's an undersized defensive tackle or nose tackle, but the kid is a beast in the middle. And now you got Vic Beasley and you know just some other guys in there. There's some other trades in the mix that I'm hearing that I think Atlanta at least at some point will be able to contend with them. But yeah, Jarrett would be the other guy out of Clemson that I think was a steal in the draft.
Yeah, and again, this goes back to why I said linebackers were so important this year because of quicker, faster, bigger tight end receivers, all of 6'3 and better. Now, where the linebackers or the outside linebackers more especially come into play, they can help with the underneath passing routes. And now that gives those corners who are a little undersized an opportunity to play the long ball or the deep ball, as we like to call it. So, now you find this very interesting thing happening in the NFL with the spread and how now you have to play true matchup. And so this is where you're going to start seeing a lot of defensive ends drop off. You're going to see some interesting things this year in defense that you haven't seen in quite some time or possibly ever in the NFL with a lot of defensive ends dropping out of the coverage and you bring a lot of rush up the middle with some of those inside linebackers and even some of the outside linebackers. So just it's going to be real interesting to see how people cover up the matchups this year.
Yep, absolutely. We'll move on to these other two real quickly because the last two topics, like I said, I think we're going to dig into pretty good. Colts owner Jim Irsay has been quoted as saying he sees at least two Super Bowl titles in the Luck era. And, you know, me and Reggie, we were talking a couple of weeks ago on the show. I actually got them pegged as the favorite from the AFC. And, you know, their first one could be as soon as this year.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think that Luck is, you know, most definitely he's proven himself as a competitor. He's proven himself as a leader. Now the question is what does he do coming into this year? I think he's hungry. I think he's ready. I think the team is healthy. I think their focus is there. And as you start to see the Manning era in Denver, you know, fade to the sunset without, you know, putting him out the pasture, I think he's ready. I think he's seen enough of that competition now to push it. Two, I don't know. One, I do. I do feel that within the next 3 years, you will see the Colts with a championship. I don't know about two. It just kind of depends on what happens because, again, we know how this free agent markets work. Again, you know, I do feel that he has one in him for sure, though.
Right, I agree. I agree, Coach.
And next thing, the Seattle defensive end Bruce Irvin situation. Obviously, they did not pick up his fifth option. That angered him until he turned into the Incredible Hulk. And demanded that he be traded if they were not going to pick up his option, with his top three selections for teams being the Atlanta Falcons, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Atlanta Falcons.
Right, and that was one of those ones that I'd heard about that's picking up a lot of steam. Michael Bennett in Seattle has also, you remember earlier there was a rumor that he had also requested a trade to Atlanta, and then they reneged and said, no, that wasn't the case, but apparently now it is indeed the case, although Atlanta wasn't mentioned as the actual spot, but I think it was kind of inferred. So there are some circles that feel like Bruce Irving and Michael Bennett will both end up in Atlanta at some point before the season starts.
It's a big move. I am curious to know how do they fit into that team in salary cap wise, with the draft picks that they have, with some players that they have pending, such as Julio Jones, with the contract that's out there in the wind. So it's going to be interesting to see how they maneuver to get the, you know, to try to get those type of deals done.
Well, in that particular case, now it makes sense to me. Now, as I go back to free agency, there were a lot of people at arms, including myself, about the lack of movement within Atlanta. They came out of the free agency market with about $25 million in cap space, and we couldn't understand why. So this would make sense. I mean, Michael Bennett's contract you'll have to fit in, but Bruce Irving is in the last of his five-year contract. So I think it can work. I mean, with Julio, there are some guys that's probably going to have to restructure, namely Matt Ryan, for instance. But I can see it happening with about $25, $30 million in cap already.
Yeah, I definitely see it. And I think, Reggie, the quick answer here, even though I'll pose it to you, as the diehard Atlanta Falcoholic that you are, does one or both of those guys being added to the roster make you want to pay that PSL?
Well, I'm already doing it anyway. I've already committed to my seats, but I tell you what it does. We get those two guys coupled with some of the picks that we've had and coupled with the strategy change, I think you see Atlanta become a top-10 defense.
I look forward to it because I actually enjoy defense quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I think all of the players are back to it quickly because they just want to change from the season. And I think that happened quickly. But then again, I want the Falcons, and I'm saying this to Falcons fans now, be patient. Be very patient. Because, again, you know, they're coming in with something totally different than what a lot of these players have been accustomed to over their careers in Atlanta. So there is an adjustment to this. And I want to say Atlanta will be competitive this year. I think they will show that they are picking up the steam, but by next year they'll be ready to roll with it.
Yeah, absolutely. The other quick thing I wanted to get – or no, we're past all the quick things. Now we get to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. First of all, they do not draft a running back, which means they are going with Darren McFadden from Arkansas. Jerry Jones, also a big Arkansas guy, so that kind of makes sense now. Obviously, Chris Johnson's still out there in free agent land, so he could be a late camp arrival or something like that. But the thing that struck me is just so off the wall, but it made the most sense, is that you take arguably the best offensive line of last year and you add arguably the best offensive lineman from this draft in Lael Collins with that whole scenario and saga that's played out, and there's no pressure on this kid to be amazing to start with. He can be a backup and learn, and somewhere down the road they can easily let one of these veterans go and plug him right in.
Yeah, I both with Collins as well as Gregory, I think it was very interesting that that Dallas is now moving towards that high risk, high reward area, because you now add this guy in with Dez Bryant and yet another guy that you may have to monitor, so to speak. But again, it's high risk, high reward, man. I mean, I've often said, and a lot of guys can't stand it, man, you need killers on your team to win championships. I believe that. And I don't mean that lightly, in a lighter sense of the term. But, you know, you got to need guys with that edge. And they certainly have done that. So I think it was a great move on Dallas's part. It shows what type of owner Jerry Jones is. And that he knows, you know, he actually understands that, that, you know, you need those guys with an edge, and he definitely has picked up two guys this year that have an edge.
I agree. I'm curious to know. I'm curious to still see what Dallas is going to do at the running back spot. I don't know if McFadden is that natural fit for them. I think that, you know, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with Peterson in Minnesota. Is there something that's happening in the, you know, behind the scenes that we do not see? But they're going to have them a veteran running back for sure. I mean, they're going to need that. McFadden does have the years as a veteran. He has the status at least. But I still think they're going to need a true, you know, behind that line if they're going to go in that direction and continue to go with what they did last year, which made them productive and took a lot of pressure off Romo.
Yeah, I do have them pegged as well as one of the top three NFC teams, especially after this draft. I think they're definitely up there. Everybody has their own question marks, but I do think Dallas is still a highly talented team that will make a deep playoff run as long as they rule everything a catch, apparently.
I think there was a – wasn't there an amendment to that rule or something? Did I read that properly?
They kind of threw it around back and forth, but ultimately at the end of the day, they didn't really tweak that rule all that much. They still kind of said – that when the ball's in the air, you're either a receiver or a running back, and depending on which one you're classified as at that point, you're either a catcher or you're a runner, and depending on which one you're classified as at that point, that's the rule that applies to you.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it really didn't do much. Of all the things they could have talked about, even the competition committee, the only thing that really had a lot of legs is fixing the extra point. Either moving up to the 1 yard line to encourage people to go for two more, which would increase the contact, so I'm not sure about that, or moving it back, you know, to the 10 or 15 yard line and making the extra point a little bit harder. But besides that, and maybe making the goalpost shorter or making it closer in, they didn't really do much this year.
Well, I mean, to TBD, how's that?
right. I mean, they still do have another meeting in about a month, so we'll see at that point if the owners and a competition committee get together and actually change anything, but I wouldn't put a lot of eggs in that basket, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see much changing, at least this year. Maybe, you know, if they have a lot of incidents coming up this kind of season, you'll see a shift, but it's hard to kind of just throw out rules or amend them because they felt that they've done everything in the research to put them in place.
Right. And moving to our last topic and team, we're going to talk about those New England Patriots. And I'm going to start by saying they released cornerback Alphonso Dinard or Dinard, depending on apparently him and his brother pronounce it differently. So whichever one he is, he was released, and Arizona actually claimed him off of waivers afterwards. But my thing is do they have any corners left? Because I count at least three that have left town since they won the Super Bowl. And then, obviously, after that, we will jump into the Deflategate final rulings that are out. But what do you guys think about them releasing another corner?
Well, I mean, it's the Bill Belichick way, right? I mean, the guy releases a corner and then he goes off and His draft strategy has always been selecting the best player. I mean, he can take guys like Tyrone Poole and those guys and turn a receiver into a corner. So I don't think he really cares. You know what I mean? He's going to get whatever he gets out of that situation. So I don't think it's going to make much of a difference as far as Belichick's system is concerned.
I agree. I've always said, you know, the secret to Coach Belichick and the New England Patriots has always been those players play two positions. So, again, you know, we have to look and see what he's looking at in free agency that he's bringing in that people have, you know, probably not looked at close enough. But trust me, if he released those guys, that means he has some guys that he felt strongly about that can compete or were better than what he had on his roster at the moment.
Right. I agree with that. It's another TBD, so to say. And then the Deflategate thing that is Ted Wells finally typed up his report. It's like 250 pages or something like that. So that's probably what took this long. it actually took longer for Deflategate than it did for the bullying stuff in Miami, oddly enough. But basically what was found, or what his determination was, it is more probable than not, you know, than not, that they that the Patriots cheated and did something with these balls as far as the inflation, but he could not find enough evidence to really validate 100%. Now, in the process, there's two assistants with the team, like an officiating assistant and a team assistant, and, of course, Tom Brady that are mentioned in this as far as their cooperation or lack thereof in his case. And it is being rumored right now by the Miami Herald, which, oddly enough, the Miami Dolphins being one of the rivals of the Patriots, but they are reporting that Tom Brady could actually get suspended for his role in not cooperating and the fact that he probably knew more than he told anybody. They're rumoring anywhere between two games to an entire season, which in my opinion means Tom just walks and waves everybody goodbye. But me and Coach were debating this earlier, and Reggie, we'll get your take to start with. I don't think he's going to get suspended at all. It'll probably be a fine, or if he does, he sits out the first quarter of a preseason game. What do you think?
I think that if Goodell goes that route, they'll burn down the NFL headquarters. I mean, for the harsh punishments that he's given out for lesser penalties, I mean, even with my own team getting kind of slapped on the hand with draft picks because of noise gate or whatever, when you've given yourself a competitive advantage, which, by the way, Noisegate didn't give us any advantage because we still ended up 4-12. But that being said, when you get a competitive advantage like the Patriots did, winning the Super Bowl, there's no way he can't bring down the hammer on this guy. There's no way. Not without recourse.
I said the same thing, Reg. I'm thinking the same thing. His track record and his consequences to players in the NFL, as well as owners and, you know, and coaches, has to show a level of consistency in it. And now the question is how does this hit Tom Brady? I think if I'm betting on this, guys, I think he will end up with something on the end of probably a 6-game suspension. I think they'll reduce that back to 4. But I think he'll miss. I think he has to go at least as hard as a quarter of the season right now. I do. I think that because of all of the things that Mr. Goodell has done in the past, I think now this is going to be the period at the end of the sentence. And this particular ruling is going to speak volumes to everybody across the NFL as far as where he stands in his philosophy on the disciplines and the consequences of an NFL player, or the NFL as a whole. So it's going to be quite interesting what he does with this. I think there has to be a level of severity involved in it to not necessarily make a statement, but more importantly, show the consistency in his punishments, if you will.
Yeah, again, you know, anything less than, I think I saw like a 10-game suspension. I think that's apropos. I think it is. I think that's what it's going to take. If you can now come back after the fact, and I bring up Greg Hardy, and some people may think, hey, it's not in the same boat, and maybe offensively it's not, because you're not battering or allegedly hitting a woman or whatever the case is. But even after the courts exonerated this man, he comes back and issues, you know, a 10 or 12-game suspension just based on an assumption legally.
Right.
You can't not do the same thing with Tom Brady. You just can't.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, Tom, if you do get suspended, we would love to have you here on the show for whatever your suspension is, to where we don't have any affiliation, so you can say whatever you'd like, and for the most part, and I'm sure the Patriots would be good with that as well. But on the other side of the break, of course, is Falcon Zone. We will jump into all things Falcons, so if you want to stay tuned for that, we would love to get to it. I know Reggie's itching to get to it. But for the coach and the King ACLian, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you on the other side of the break for Falcon Zone. Jeremy the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available. We've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more. And that's right, just like the song says, Falcons on top, because right now there's a four-way tie for this division, and I feel like there could be a four-way tie for a long time this season. But we are here live on Blog Talk Radio, thanks to Impact Media for Falcons Zone. Want to welcome you in. Of course, the Coach Haywood Hill, the King ATL, and Reggie Walker, and me, Jeremy the Impact York, are back for Falcons Zone. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Jeremy, doing great.
Doing great, I'm good.
Now, as we've kind of teased, we are going to jump into and we're going to do our best to make it quick, but we want to give as much attention to this as possible. We're going to get into the draft here in a second. We'll kind of give our brief overview, general thoughts on the schedule up to now. We will dissect the games on a later date and then talk about a couple of the news and notes and get everybody out on their way because the weather has been quite nice in Atlanta here lately, except for being a little hot, but I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I was going to say, after coming back from Vegas, I was in the 90s, upper 90s. And, of course, a week or so before that, I was in Milwaukee, where it didn't get above 40. So I'm not going to complain either.
Yeah, see, the thought – go ahead, Coach.
I'm sorry, that's the one reason why you have to love Atlanta's weather.
Exactly. Only locals can love Atlanta weather for sure because nobody else understands it. But, Reggie, the thought just occurred to me that I've actually got a buddy out in Las Vegas. I should have hooked you guys up because I think he had a cabana at one of the hotels for the fight.
Oh, man, that would have been nice. Although, man, I tell you, there are certain elements of partying that if I don't see for a long time, I'll be okay.
On that note, we will get into the draft party or the draft recap, so to say. I haven't had a chance to really dissect the seven picks that the Falcons had, but at the same time, I know a little bit about each guy, probably just enough to get some of the fans of the show to send me some hate mail a little while later. But we will jump quickly into these. We'll just go down in the order. And obviously, another bad kept secret, as Vic Beasley did fall to number 8, which I don't think he fell at number 8. I think it was he's a top 5 talent who just happened to be there because of needs. But he does go to the Atlanta Falcons. He's, of course, the outside linebacker slash stand-up defensive end at times from Clemson. What do you guys think about the Beasley pick?
I think that was who they were targeting. There was a lot of speculation initially about them possibly trying to trade up to get Fowler, obviously because of the connection between him and Dan Quinn. But I think that you know, Beasley was not their fallback. I think, you know, what that guy brings to the table, it's going to be great to see what Dan Quinn can do with him. I was really, really happy with that pick.
Yeah, I don't think you go wrong either way with Fowler or Beasley. But what you do have in Beasley is you have a guy that can give you something on both ends, from the edge as well as from a linebacker, you know, position. I think that, you know, had they traded up, they wouldn't have gone wrong, but again, with having Beasley is a great addition to Atlanta, and I think he's going to do a lot of wonderful things because he's that type of athlete. He's a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And Reggie, I'll pose it to you this way just because I know the great discussion we had for a lot of last season into this season. Last year, you like Taylor Lewan a little better than Jake Matthews, and the Falcons go with Jake Matthews. I guess in the same sense, was Dante Fowler kind of the Taylor Lewan of this draft, the guy they could jump up and take or take instead? And are you ultimately more happy with Vic Beasley instead?
Actually, Vic Beasley was my pick all along out of the two, even though there was the connection between him and Quinn. Some of the things I saw in the combine that he was able to do was kind of freakish. Also, I enjoyed the fact that he grew up an Atlanta Falcon fan. And sometimes, you know, hey, the best guy to play for your team is one that's always wanted to play for your team, you know. So I was always a fan of Vic Beasley from the beginning anyway.
And he is a local boy, if I am not mistaken, and I will give a shout-out to my friends in Adairsville. I believe he is from Adairsville, Georgia, which is a hop, skip, and jump from where we all are right now.
He is absolutely from Adairsville.
Which is a nice area, even though it is Tornado Alley, so, you know, everybody stay safe over there.
The one thing I like about this business is that he actually got it, you know, he was actually a little bit heavier when he went to the combine, which then at that point shed any doubts on the Fowler pick. I think this kid is very freakish in nature. I think he brings a lot of charisma to the football team. Again, as I spoke in the last segment, no one went wrong in the first 32 picks. As a matter of fact, I could have probably estimated up to 40 picks, including some of the high picks in the second round. But those guys were just on the – I'm telling you guys, on these scouting reports, these guys are on the cusp of being first-round picks. So you're going to see a lot of great football over the next 3 years in the NFL as far as these players are concerned. I mean, no one went wrong. And again, that's why I said, where's the measurable? The measurable that nobody makes a move in the first round, which is normally unheard of. At least one and or two teams are going to make some type of negotiation to make moves, and no one did, which lets you know that everybody needed what they got on their team. Everybody got a player that can impact their team right now, even if it wasn't the primary skill.
Yeah,
exactly. And then I was a little surprised I wasn't surprised. I had quite a bit of conversation with a few fans that obviously were upset because Atlanta didn't go after Todd Gurley when all last year these same people were complaining about lack of pass rush. So that's why I was most happy with what Atlanta did. Is they went against what the fan favorite was, which was to get a Todd Gurley, and they went after what they actually needed this time.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And, a lot of people did want Todd Gurley, you know, to actually have a hometown guy, but when I explained to everybody that, hey, your first-round pick is from Georgia, he just didn't play school here, and that's not no fault of his. He went for the better opportunity. But I think you're going to see a lot of Beasley jerseys. Real quickly, I'm trying to find my little list. We'll get into it in a second. Currently, that would be number 44 Falcons jersey would be Vic Beasley. But if he makes this team, he may get a different number.
Yeah. When he makes this team, you mean?
Yeah, of course. I don't think there's much question there. Of course, in round two, go ahead, Coach.
Let me say this, and I'm going to catch y'all, Jim. One of the things I think that was really interesting this year, and I don't know if you guys paid attention to it, that the rookies are going to get, at least the first, the ones, as we call them, they're going to get an opportunity to pick their jersey number. So he probably will end up with the jersey that he wants. As a result, I think that was one of the interesting little tidbits that they added this time, is that those guys will get an opportunity to pick what jersey that they want. Now, if someone's already pre-existing with their jersey, they might have to, you know, negotiate a little bit, if you will, to trade out numbers. But from my understanding, most of the ones will end up with the numbers that they prefer.
Okay. Well, that's good then. So if you guys want to go out and go ahead and buy me that 44 Beasley jersey, I will happily wear it. But I think I'm going to go your route, Reggie, and the next jersey I get will be custom.
Absolutely. You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, because more than likely I won't trade myself, and they won't trade me, so it'd be a good number.
Absolutely. My thoughts exactly.
Round two, that would be the 10th pick in round two, 42nd overall. They go with Jalen Collins, the corner out of LSU. I personally like it. They definitely need corners, especially given the wide receivers and the Funchess pickup in Carolina. But there's one thing in the AFC and NFC South. Regardless of the records, not only do they play each other tight, but they're going to throw the ball a lot.
Right, and this is, again, we're going back to Collins. There was a shift in how you definitely know that you've got a lockdown with Marcus Trufant on one side. Robert Alford has been working out with Ryan Clark in the offseason on his what appears to be his switch to safety. So you now go get this other guy that has an edge. There were some question marks about him. He had some failed drug tests, so forth and so on. But, again, the kid is tall. He's physical. He hits. So now you've got, if he is anything like Trufant, there are going to be some teams that are going to have some problems with that secondary. They're not going to get up as easily as they have been in the past.
The thing to talk about this young man is, again, he's a physical specimen, and he's going to be able to help on the run as well. So being that he played in the SEC, he pretty much has great balance. When you're facing a Cooper and some of those guys that you face, and you're looking at a Todd Gurley and some of that. So he's one of those guys that will plug and play pretty quick. I don't know if they're going to use him on the wide side of the field, if they're going to use him on the boundary side of the field, which would be the short side of the field. But he is a healthy addition because, again, if you start finding Trufant getting banged up a little bit and you need to rest him, you can always switch those guys out. So, again, when we're talking about matchups, he will be able to go in into nickel packages and things of that nature as well. But I think he will start this year as one of those moving Alfred probably back to safety. And then you got a three-headed monster because Alfred is rangy and he has speed, but he understands playing corner. So now you get a lot going on there, and I think that this is going to be a very good secondary fast. So look out for the Falcons' secondary. I'm saying put a star inside their secondary this year.
Yeah, and I just have to draw this parallel just to get fans a little more excited and hopefully maybe excites you guys as well. When you talk about tall, physical corners and defensive backs, and you think about where Dan Quinn came from, he built the Legion of Boom, or he helped build it over there, which they're not always the top-level corners and safeties, but they're tall, they're physical. You do always pay every time you have to play against them. Jalen Collins would be a great Legion of Boom addition, so he's kind of building the Legion of Boom down here.
Absolutely, and even, you know, we're skipping ahead a little bit, but when you get down to the last pick, Akeem King, he fits that same model. He's a Cam Chancellor type of a player as far as his stature and his physicality. So, absolutely, I think that's what he was going for when he drafted Collins. And you can definitely see him starting to put his footprint on this thing. So I was happy with that pick.
Well, you know, since you mentioned him, let's go ahead and go to Akeem King, which is going to be so much fun to say if we're in a play-by-play booth. Fortunately, neither of the three of us are currently. But I'm just going to call him King from here on out, I think. He has a defensive back out of San Jose State. They did take him in the seventh round, the 32nd pick, which is 249 overall. He is actually a converted wide receiver. And for people that are concerned about those kind of conversions, it would be an opposite Devin Hester. Devin Hester was a defensive back his entire life all the way up to the NFL when the Bears had the bright idea to make him a receiver and then never teach him how to be a receiver. Fortunately, Atlanta was able to. But I think Akeem King here is definitely one of those tall, rangy, physical guys. Same things you were saying, Reggie, and he could be the fourth or fifth guy in the Legion of Boom South here.
Yeah, and again, I think you see this guy make an impact early. He's one of those guys. I went back and did some research on him. He's one of those guys, much like Richard Sherman, that caution teams for skipping him. The other thing is, you mentioned that he was a wide receiver, transferred from a wide receiver position, and I know Coach Hill is definitely the expert on this, but I've always heard the defensive backs were wide receivers that couldn't catch. So that means when you've got a wide receiver that converts to a defensive back, you know, to me that lends a hand to,
hey, now you've got a higher percentage of interception possibilities because you've got guys out there now that can actually catch the ball when it's coming their way.
Yeah, thank you for that, Rick. And I'd like to go ahead and just segue right into what you just talked about. One of the things about this, and then I want you to keep this in mind, because you brought a good point, Jeremy, and you brought a great point as well, Reggie. Having David Hester there, now look for him to go back to defense. Okay, he'll flip back to the defensive side of the ball. And now you're going to have this team built with Trufant, Hester, King, and Collins. And now you're going to see this dynamic come into play really, really fast. So that's why I said put a star beside their secondary, because you're going to see this transition happen pretty quick. Probably right around the second preseason game, you'll see Hester starting to, you know, make the transition back over. But it's always a luxury because now, if you think about it, with you having Julio Jones, who's been kind of gimping most of his career, now you can actually roll guys over, and now they're starting to take some of the semi-blueprint of what you saw with the Patriots. Remember, we talked about having players that can play two positions. So now if you lose something at receiver in the game, you can still come back and plug this kid as a receiver. No, he's not going to be your one, but he's not going to embarrass you on the field if it becomes an emergency. And you're going to start to see a lot of teams take on this formula down the stretch of what else can a player do other than just one thing unless he's the top guy at that spot.
You know what? I don't hear anybody else talking about this, so we may be ahead of the curve on the Hester flip and some of these other ones. So it'll be interesting to see which other local media friends and colleagues of ours start trying to jump on the bandwagon of the Legion of Boom we're building here.
Absolutely.
And, of course, at Impact Media here, and especially End Zone Falcons on Super Pro Football Show, we will take all the credit in the world of we were the first ones to say this. Moving on, let's just stay in the seventh round while we're already here. The eighth pick, which is 225 overall, was offensive tackle Jake Rogers from Eastern Washington. And what little bit I was able to go back, because I did, for some reason, I don't know why I watched an Eastern Washington game this year, because they're really hard to find. I guess it was on ESPN2 one day. But I remember this guy playing, and I do believe, even though he's on the other side of the line, I think he's going to be my Tyler Starr this year. I'm going to campaign hard that Jake Rogers is one of my guys I want to see playing.
Well, with Atlanta going to this zone blocking scheme, you know, just as much as defensive players kind of get hurt in that scheme, so do offensive linemen. I think that they're not quite sure, even though, you know, I've heard very good things about Lamar Holmes. He's lost weight. He's got more agile, so forth and so on. There's still a question mark about Sam Baker, Jake Matthews, and I think a lot of people don't really even understand. I don't expect to see Jake Matthews until after the bye with that injury that he had, that plantar fasciitis injury. I think that's going to take him out half the season. So I think this was just one of those guys that kind of fits that mold. I don't know. He definitely won't start on the left side. But, you know, there's another big athletic kid that can fit into the zone blocking scheme and come in and compete right away.
Yeah, I think that you're going to see Holmes play left because he has the experience there right now. I don't know how Sam Baker fits into the vast scheme of this anymore at all, to be quite honest with you. I think he's behind the eight ball. I think he would. Now, I think he's the odd man out just due to his salary, his injury, and he's not been on the field playing for quite some time because of injury. So I don't see Baker. I'd be surprised if I see Baker starting this year. I really do. I think that you got enough in Holmes now where he's played on both sides and can go and you can bump him inside if need be at guard to play this because with the zone blocking, it doesn't require you to be the best blocker. It just requires you to be athletic. And they'll have a lot of linemen in there. So you're not going to find a whole bunch of guys over 300 pounds. I mean, they're going to be small guys. You're going to get down to the 280-290 because they got to hit at the first level and they got to scoot and get to the second level. So the way this team is designed, it's kind of like playing zone defense. You're blocking in an area more so than you are an individual. So, again, I don't know how Sam Baker was going to fit into that. So, don't be too surprised if you don't see Sam Baker in that mix early as a result of that.
Yeah, I think Sam Baker and Tyson Jackson, and we talked a little bit earlier in the first half about how they would fit a Michael Bennett and a Bruce Irving in, and as well as handle Julio Jones' contract. Sam Baker, as well as Tyson Jackson, But Sam Baker especially was one of those guys that was tabbed as he could not be cut before June 1st. But when he, if he is cut after June 1st, Atlanta gets $6 million in cap space back. So, again, I'm with you, Coach. I think I don't think Sam Baker or Tyson Jackson, for that matter, will be on the roster if they're able to pull off a trade for Michael Bennett and for Bruce Irving.
That would be just enough money to hire the three of us for the field goal and punting.
Hey, man, $12 million in cap space just between those two guys alone. I think they can get us for that.
And
oh, yeah.
That would free up some money for those defensive ends from Seattle that want to come here.
Hey, man, as well as still get the Julio Jones re-signing done as well, because they're going to have to definitely drop some coin on him.
Yep, definitely so. And let's go ahead and move into the fourth round there. The eighth pick in that round, 107 overall, to somebody that's going to play next to Julio a good bit, I would imagine, and that's wide receiver Justin Hardy from East Carolina. What have you guys heard about this guy?
Well, the interesting thing that I heard about both him and it was one other guy, which we'll get to before that, that's the running back out of Indiana,
mm-hmm.
is that both of these guys led the NCAA statistically in their categories or for their positions. So from a receiving perspective, this guy actually led, that he had more receiving yards in the NCAA than any other receiver out there. So they went for the top, that guy, although he didn't come from a big college. He obviously has the hands, and he obviously has the ability. So I think he'll definitely come in that slot position and take over.
The kid has very strong hands. He's very poised. He's mature. He's very mature. So this is what he does for Atlanta, okay? Harden comes in, and he gives Julio something to go after. Because this kid can come in and he can play the slot immediately. Although you have Julio on the outside, you can also move Harden to the outside as well because he has speed. So now what you have now is a Julio who's emerging. It's kind of like how you had Roddy White and Julio came in. Now you have Harden coming in for Julio. This is what you're going to go to this guy a lot. He's tough. He's strong. He's physical. He has sure hands on him. And he has, I mean, his contact, the way he handles the ball after contact and gets the rack yard, is incredible. So, again, this was a steal for Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes it open up a spot there. He can fly it into Hester's spot. Hester can swap back over to the defensive side, and you just got stronger in two places.
Right. I mean, it's going to be fun to see those four wide receiver sets going off on the Atlanta side.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this team. As people can probably tell, the cartwheels down the sidewalk. But let's see.
Let's number 73.
Yeah, I was debating going to him or to who you said was the steal of the draft. So we'll go Tevin Coleman from Indiana, the running back. He went round 3, the ninth pick, 73rd overall. From everything I've heard and the tape that I've seen just in the last 24 hours, on top of stuff I already knew, this guy could compete for a starting job because not only is he super quick and really good with his cuts, it depends on how fast he catches on, obviously, but he is really good in the pass protection, which is, Devontae's pretty good as well. So I think starting gig comes between Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman with Anton Smith, your change of pace back.
Oh, absolutely. There are some pundits, particularly the Falcoholic pundits, that believe that Coleman's going to be your starter, particularly because he ran in a zone blocking scheme and he's that guy with vision that can hit a hole, make cuts quickly in the hole, and get gone. He's a bigger guy, so he could take a little bit more pounding than maybe Devontae Freeman can take. But again, you know, an excellent pickup. You didn't have to go after a Todd Gurley because you knew you had this guy. And again, he led the NCAA in rushing yards. So, I mean, in overall rushing yards. So, again, Atlanta's going after the top tier.
Yeah, he's going to be a great fit for Atlanta. He also has the ability to catch out the backfield very well. So what you're going to see in him is a young version of what you saw in Anton Smith last year. With the fact that they're using this zone blocking that's going to open up So I look for him and Smith, believe it or not, if they'll keep Smith in the mix, they can have, they're going to have a backfield that's going to be hard to deal with because they'll have all this versatility in it.
Yeah, absolutely. All these picks, every one of them seem to excite me about a different part of the Atlanta Falcons this year. And that, of course, leads us to the steal of the pick, as Reggie Walker of our Impact Media world said. I actually agree with you for sure. But in round five, the first overall pick in that one, 137 overall, nose tackle from Clemson, Grady Jarrett. And not only does he have his friend and colleague Vic Beasley on his team, but it's very hard to find a natural nose tackle in this league, a Vince Wilfork-style guy. And Grady Jarrett actually is a pretty good nose tackle.
Well, on top of that, he comes from good pedigree in that his father is none other than Jesse the Hammer Tuggle. So, I mean, he comes from that. He's Atlanta Falcons royalty. From my understanding, he has already joined the ranks of Adrian Claiborne and Rashid Haigman. Have all three of them have joined the ranks of the Chuck Smith regime, and who is now starting to put his polish and finish on these guys. Don't be surprised to see Babineau out. Don't be surprised to see Paul Soliai out, because with these three guys, you can wreak havoc on an offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he comes from, you know, Falcon royalty says a lot. And he's going to be ready, and he's going to do a good job.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if you guys saw the video of Jesse Tuggle announcing the pick. I don't think he knew until he got on stage, because it looks like to me he's walking up on stage, and as the, I believe it was a lady introducing him, you know, Falcons royalty, Jesse Tuggle, he looks down at the card, I guess, to see who it was, and just gets the biggest grin on his face. And at that point, it's got to be something cool not only to share an experience like that with your son, but it's with the team you battled for all those years, and you get to announce your son's name across the NFL network.
Absolutely. I did get a chance to check that out, Jeremy, and that was good to watch. The other notable thing that came out of this is on the first day of the draft, Jarrett did not get picked up. He had a house fire that basically wiped out everything that he had. The next day, he got picked up by the Falcons, and immediately, in true Arthur Blank fashion, he mobilized and sent people up to make sure that Jarrett and all of his family had everything they needed to replace that horrible fire incident that happened at his house. So, again, these are the types of things, coupled with Dan Quinn. This is why you're seeing, and I mentioned this to another friend of mine, this is why you're seeing guys like Michael Bennett, Bruce Irving. Guys are coming out and saying, I want to play for the Falcons. And this is why I think, you know, we're going to turn the table really, really quickly. I know, Coach, you say, you know, be patient. It's much like the other Atlanta team, you know, hey, once they learn the scheme, you'll see them a little differently. But when you got guys that want to be here, it makes all the difference in the world. And I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled. It was very easy to cut the check for the PSLs, believe it or not.
Well, yeah, I mean, cut the check way before that.
No, because I was in wait and see mode, and even in, you know, wait and see, just the way that these guys are responding. He had 100% participation with his voluntary workouts. I mean, again, these guys are already starting to buy in.
Sorry, Coach, I wasn't trying to interrupt.
No, it's okay. What I was going to say, and also, Atlanta is one of those cities, guys. As I mentioned before, back in the heyday of New York. When they had it, back in the heyday when, you know, Los Angeles had it. Now Atlanta is that city where it's not hard to find players that want to come here and play because of all of what the city has to offer. But from the coaching staff perspective as well, you know, a lot of these guys, it's going to be a plug-and-play. When I say be patient with them, is because also with that being said, you have to take the injuries into consideration. You know, naturally as a coach, I don't fall in love. I mean, we fall in like, we don't fall in love. And so, again, as they are growing into this, a lot of the guys are going to it depends on what happens. I think one of the biggest things that's going to determine a lot of Atlanta's success this year is going to be around those two picks that you're talking about in Seattle right now. What do they do with that? How much of that can he bring quickly? If he can get those other two elements onto this roster, then you're going to find something faster because the learning curve is not going to have to be there as much. But if he does not, when I speak of being patient, it's just all about them taking it all in and the change. I think it was a breath of fresh air for Atlanta, getting Quinn, bringing him in, doing the things that they're doing right now. But, again, the reality is when you hit the field with it, how does it go from practice and transition into the game and how it's played? So that's why I say be patient. It's not because they won't be competitive. They're going to win football games. And surely they're going to win more football games than they won last year. But then, again, I'm factoring in injury, time it takes to learn the scheme, who you're going to plug and play, how do you do that from week to week, how do guys adjust to all of this, what do you flush, what do you retain. So those are the things I speak of when I'm speaking of just be patient with them, because they will go through some of those growing pains. They might come out the gate. And hopefully if Atlanta does this, they come out the gate quick, fast, in a hurry, knock off eight games real quick, 6 of 8, and then they're in that position when everybody else is catching up. But, again, if they come out the gate and it goes in the opposite direction, I want people to understand that this is all part of them just getting that new, fresh air in Atlanta.
Yeah, and as you talk about coming out of the gate and coming out hot and try to get in front of some people early, we'll transition quickly into just our general thoughts on the season, as the schedule was finally released, which was weird to me because I knew the owners and organizations had it for up to 2 to 3 weeks at the time they actually announced it. But NFL Network, ESPN wanted to have 3-hour specials and drag it out. So, you know, more power to them on that one. Is there really a team, even in the preseason or the regular season, that, you know, one of these, what's the game or a couple games that you guys have already circled on the calendar that you're kind of looking forward to?
The two for me this year, because I plan on definitely being, well, one, I'll definitely be there, but the two games that stood out for me was week 3 at the Cowboys and week 11 at the Colts. Those were the two games that stood out to me. So I'm very anxious to get over in. They get a test early with both the Eagles as well as with the Cowboys up front to see what they're made of. As well as, you know, in the preseason, you've got the Ravens, which is that fourth game where, you know, you're playing a little bit more of your starters in that game. So you get to kind of see what happens in that first three quarters. But in the regular season, definitely Cowboys and the Colts.
I tell you, for me, I'm going to add to that, Reggie. I like to add Tampa Bay this year to see how that comes when they have to play Tampa and they have Carolina as well, and having those two type of quarterbacks. I have not had opportunity to look at the schedule, but with those other two games, as well as what's going to be happening in the preseason, a lot of it is going to make for what the Falcons come out with. I think the games are spaced well enough to where you get an opportunity to see them over time. And, I think it's going to be really exciting. But I also want to add to this, too. My concern with Atlanta right now, and my concern that has always been with Atlanta, is what are you doing at quarterback? I know you have Matt Ryan, but what happens if you lose him? Do you have somebody in the back that can step up to the forefront and get it done now? I like the third-string quarterback. I feel that he should be number 2, personally. But that's my personal preference. But, again, what have they done there, Reginald, with that, along with Ryan, and that comes along behind him, especially if he gets injured this year?
Well, I mean, they retained T.J. Yates. I mean, I kind of saw that one coming. But I do think Renfrey's still going to, and you're talking Sean Renfrey, I think he's still going to play a role in all of this. I would not be surprised to see Renfrey move up to the top, to the second spot. And that guy has shown the ability to be able to command the offense, make the throws that he needs to make. Again, I think you'll see Atlanta rely a lot more heavily on defense this year to keep them in games. And Matt Ryan, again, and I'm knocking on wood as I'm saying this, the one thing that we can say about Matt Ryan is the guy's never been hurt. For as much pounding as he's taken, as many shots as he's taken, he has yet to miss a game in the 6 or 7 seasons that he's been in the league. So the likelihood of him going down is low. But should he go down, I think we've got what we need. I think we're okay.
Okay. Well, I do think that with some of this zone blocking and the running, it takes a lot of pressure off, too, because if he does have something, you know, that's ailing him right now that you don't know about, it at least gives him time to heal.
And that's what, again, you just brought that up. The zone blocking scheme seems to indicate that they're going to rely a little bit heavily on the run.
We've got three super fast guys, guys with big cuts. You got an Anton Smith that can take it to the house at any moment. You got Devontae Freeman, and now you add Coleman into the mix. I think that'll take a lot of pressure off Matt to have to make those big plays every single play. So I'm Kyle Shanahan's offense is kind of based on that. You know, heavy run, hit them downfield with a Julio. So I think they'll give Matt a little bit of a break this year.
Go ahead, Coach.
No, go ahead, because I want to add something else to the backfield in just a minute. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, I was just going to say the easy picks for games I'm looking forward to. Obviously, going to Jacksonville in December will be nice. I just noticed as well that at no point will Atlanta ever play in a cold city. In fact, I think their longest trip anywhere is New York in September. But obviously the Jaguars, because it allows me to see a lot of my Jaguar friends down there. Actually, Reggie, the Colts game is a home game here. It's a CBS game.
Absolutely. That's why I said that's one I would definitely be at. The two away games that I'm definitely going to this year will be the Cowboys and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Those are the two games.
Hey, they're already looking forward to hosting me down there, and I told them I might bring some friends, so it'll be fun there. But also, I'd like to add, it happens to just be the first, not conference, division game on the docket here, and it's not until October 15th, Week 6, where a Thursday night football on NFL Network in New Orleans. I'm very much looking into going into this game, not just to go to New Orleans, but Thursday night football is a different animal unto itself. And then, of course, I agree with you guys, the Ravens coming in at the end of the preseason. It'd be a fun chance to maybe try to get a quick comment or handshake into a Harbaugh brother, which would be fun to me. But this Saints game coming up, it's really weird to me that they go all the way to Week 6 before even playing anybody in the division. And then when you get to the very end of the Falcons' schedule, it just hammers in with four of the last five games are division games.
Well, I think this past year, Jeremy, spoke to that. I mean, how much more exciting was it to get to the end of the season and literally for the Falcons and the Saints as well as the Panthers, it literally came down to those last three games to determine who was going to win the division. That was great on the NFL's part. I think there should be more onus placed on your divisional games. Move those down to the end of the season where it really matters and it's probably going to count a lot more. So I'm happy about that. I'm not sure if I'll be in New Orleans this year for that game, but I think Atlanta shook the mojo that New Orleans had on them this past season. So I don't think it'll be quite as dominating as the Saints have been in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I like the fact that the NFL is starting to move those games on the back end of the schedule. I think it brings about excitement. I think it brings about better competition. I think the games mean more. With that also being said, Reggie, I want you to put a footnote beside the kid from Army that the Falcons picked up. This kid is more of a running back, fullback type selection kid. They're adding that to the mix. I like this kid. I saw him in the Armed Forces Bowl game, and he is going to be something to be reckoned with because he's big enough as a fullback, but he also has the versatility of a running back with some hands coming out of the backfield. So, again, Atlanta has a lot in their backfield this year for a lot of teams to have to contend with.
Right, and to that point, Jeremy, you know, and Coach, Atlanta signed 19 undrafted free agents within hours after the draft. So they already had a laundry list of guys that appeared that they had their eyes on that didn't get picked up, that they brought those guys into the fold quick, fast, in a hurry. So kudos to Dan Quinn, man. First draft, I think he knocked it out of the park. It definitely told me that Dimitroff didn't necessarily have his hands on this draft as much as we were hoping he would not. And I think I'm extremely happy with what we've got.
Yeah, I think it spoke volumes that Dimitroff didn't, I don't think he had much to do with this draft whatsoever. This was all Dan Quinn and Scott Pioli.
Absolutely. It felt like it. I mean, because, again, you go with a Dimitroff, and that guy probably would have gone Todd Gurley. I mean, just because he seems to be that type of guy.
No, so, he would have traded up for Jameis Winston, I would imagine.
Yeah, or something else crazy like that, right? You're exactly correct. So, again, I'm extremely happy. I'm excited about what's coming. I'm anxious to see what pans out with this whole Bruce Irving and Michael Bennett situation. If we get those two guys, you guys aren't going to be able to shut me up. Not that you can shut me up anyway, but defensively, I think that definitely, we get those two guys, that puts us top 10 out the gate.
Well, I'm going to say this, Reggie. I'm going to go ahead and get the prediction for the Falcons now. They will finish 11-5.
I like that. With a win in the Super Bowl, correct? Over Green, beating Green Bay in the NFC Championship, right?
I don't know if it's going to go that far, but I do. I will go as far as to say that I predict them to finish 11-5, no less than 10-6 this year. And they have the team to do it this year. They have the young bodies. They have a lot of what they need. They have something new, and I think that's why I'm predicting so high, because, you know, traditionally Atlanta has been a particular type of way under Coach Smith in his era when he was there in Atlanta. Now you don't really know what to expect, because, again, I think where the surprise is going to come is offensively. I don't think they're going to do as much as what people think is going to come out of Shanahan. I think he has a lot of tricks up his sleeve. I think he's going to mix it up very, very well. I think he's going to let people see what they want to see. And he's going to be – I'm going to call him the magician. I'm going to give him the name the magician now, because I think what he's going to do is that he's going to present certain things that he wants you to see, and in that he's going to have the mix. And I think that's where he's going to screw a lot of people. I think everybody expects the Falcons defensively to be very physical, very tough, 11 bodies to the ball at all given times. But offensively, I think they're going to trick a lot of people this time, and I think that's where Matt Ryan gets an opportunity to get his rebirth. I think coming into a new offense where it's going to force a little bit more out of him, he's going to have to do a few more things that he's not accustomed to, which will bring the revitalization to him, and I think you're going to see a Matt Ryan like you did the first 3 years in the league this coming year.
And to that, Jeremy, real quick, to that point offensively, on my flight back to Atlanta from Vegas, I had the fortunate opportunity of being on the flight with Harry Douglas, Roddy White, and Julio Jones. And the one thing that stuck out to me was watching Julio Jones and Roddy White switch seats with someone with iPads in hand going over the playbook. I thought that spoke volumes to me as to what the atmosphere of this team is like. And you could see them going back and forth, and there was even a kind of a friendly banter where I think Harry Douglas tried to walk up and look over the shoulder, and Roddy stood up and pushed him away. He's like, hey, you don't work for us anymore, and they laughed it off. But to see those guys basically stay in that playbook the entire four-hour flight was something to watch.
Well, it proves to what type of – you know, it just proves to where the competition level is at the NFL and what type of professional you have to truly be. And that's what separates a lot of the kids that first come into the league, is how quick you go on the tour. I mean, now with the ones, they're just about guaranteed to play now. You know, they have to be ready to go. And think about it, guys. These guys just got drafted last week. This weekend, they're in rookie camp. So right now, they're already expecting 25% of the base offensive defense to be digested already. Formations, you know, they're expecting that stuff now. So if you saw Roddy and you saw Julio in the playbook, they know that the competition is there. They're not doing that just because they were trying to show off. They're doing it because they know there are some checks on the line right now and some bodies can be moved because it's a new day in Atlanta. It's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to the season.
Absolutely.
And we actually have a special caller on the line. I'm going to bring him in right now. He is the voice of the Texas Revolution of the Champions Indoor Football League, and, of course, he's also the hardest working man in sports radio, Mr. Sonny Clark. How are you doing today, Sonny?
I'm doing good. I listened to the show at the beginning. I had to bow for about 30 or 40 minutes, and I came back in, but I wish I had the confidence in Atlanta as much as your co-hosts do, because I look at this. I do like the offensive line pick. You know, they needed to go offensive line without question in my mind, especially with Matt Ryan running for his life So them grabbing up the offensive lineman was the right thing for them to do. And more, matter of fact, I put it up on something else. I think the fact that the Dallas Cowboys didn't go offensive line with their first pick was the biggest mistake that they possibly could. Of course, everybody thinks that Sonny Clark has lost his mind, but for the last 4 years they've picked offensive linemen, and the reason why they got a good offensive lineman is because they can bring people in and get those first-round draft pick guys to protect Tony Romo in the run. But as far as what Atlanta did, I think the fact that they grabbed up that offensive lineman and brought him in was the best pick, the first start as far as getting them on going for the year, because when you can't protect a guy, let's be honest, Matt Ryan should be, every year in consideration of the MVP, especially with what he had in as far as his weapons are concerned. But if you can't protect him, he's going to play like garbage. So getting Vic Beasley in the first round out of Clemson was the right guy to get. But as far as the rest of the team, they've got to be able to get more offensive linemen. So I think they need to definitely gear up on the offensive lineman to protect, to keep him, vertical and not running for his life. If they do that, then Matt Ryan can make the plays that he's supposed to make instead of trying to make plays and being the, I call him the Brett Favre, of the last 4 years of his career. That's not what Matt Ryan does. He needs to stay upright, he needs to stay in the pocket, and he has to find the open man.
And, Sonny, that's a great point, although I will offer this as a rebuttal to that, a slight rebuttal in that case. Going to the zone blocking scheme, because one of the things that I think Matt Ryan has been lacking during his time here in Atlanta is an elite running situation. He's not had a back here that could take that pressure off of him to allow him to be able to do those things and stay within his element, as you so eloquently pointed out. So I think that they're headed that way and saying, hey, we know we may have some deficiencies offensive line-wise, but when we're transferring over to the zone blocking scheme, we're going to get these backs, we're going to get these running backs that can take the pressure off of Matt so he's not throwing the ball 30, 40 times a game.
Exactly.
So I think that's where they kind of, to your point, offensive line definitely is a weakness. But I think they were able to kind of curve that a little bit by going heavy on the running back side and transferring over to the zone blocking scheme.
Yeah, and Michael Burner Turner was the guy. I mean, I still don't even understand why they got rid of him. I knew he had some injuries and stuff, but the fact that, the first year he wasn't there, I was really shocked that that guy did not end up on the NFL roster somewhere. I know they ran him and ran him and ran him and ran him, but like you said, that was the last time that they were actually seeing Matt Ryan actually being able to make plays out on the football field. So I thought that was huge as far as what they were doing and getting it set. You were right. They need to definitely get a little more focus on the running back. I'll be honest, I don't know about Tevin Coleman. I'm not a big, I'm not loving that pick at all. I think there are better players, so I think they need to work a little bit more as far as free agents are concerned before they, hand the ball over to this guy. I mean, he had a breakout season in Indiana, but let's be honest, Indiana was about as good at, as nobody in reality. So I'm not a big fan of the pick, but at least they're on the right track on being able to, put the pressure off of Matt Ryan so he can make the better plays downfield. And that's what it is. When you got Julio Jones and Harry Douglas that can get down the field, you got to give them the opportunity to do so. And that was one of the things I was looking at.
Well, I'll say this, and then I'll yield it. I will say this. I'll make this prediction. Expect Atlanta to carry 4 running backs this year. You're going to carry Coleman, you're going to carry Freeman, you're going to carry Anton Smith, and you're going to pick up Ray Rice. Mark my words.
Mm.
That's the guy that's going to come in and carry the load for Atlanta, is Ray Rice.
Interesting. That's interesting. That's an interesting move. Well, that's going to be real interesting to see what they do with that.
It makes all the sense in the world. Nobody's touching this guy. Atlanta's very quiet. Why not give this guy a shot? You're going to get him for beans. I understand that he has his issues, but I think that with Greg Hardy's situation, that was kind of the litmus test to see, hey, how's everybody's reaction to everything. I think you see Atlanta pick up Ray Rice.
I could see that. I've been campaigning for him to be in Jacksonville, but, Atlanta makes sense too.
Yeah, it makes sense, and it'll make sense for Leonard to pick him up. I mean, he's out there, he's free. He fits the mold of what you want in zone blocking in that type of running back. I think he can do it. There's no question that he can do it. The question is, will Atlanta make that type of move? And again, with them being kind of thin with offensive linemen, the zone blocking works. You don't need a lot of offensive linemen because, again, these guys are not going to be your traditional, you know, 300-pound guys. That's why Holmes is shedding the weight, because he knows you're blocking in that area. You're basically chip blocking, scooping second level, getting up, knocking guys off the football so that you can open up lanes. So I do agree with you, Reggie. I see the formula of the four running backs. The Ray Rice move will be quite interesting. The other two moves coming out of Seattle are going to be interesting. But I think, again, I agree with you, the prediction of them leaning heavy on defense this year as to why they're going to move that direction fast, quick, and try to get as much of the learning curve down is where Atlanta's going to compete a lot. Matt Ryan, keeping him upright, keeping him healthy, making sure that he doesn't get hit too many times this year, the zone blocking helps. It creates all of the spacing, forces you have to kind of hold your water before you just fire off into a quarterback. Atlanta 11-5 as a result of it.
Absolutely.
If they think about Ray Rice, let me just throw this out there and then I'll pop off because I got some things to do. If they think about Ray Rice, they better not pay this guy. I mean, if in reality they're really, I've been scouring and I'm hearing nobody talk about Ray Rice. You're absolutely right. But it will depend upon how the front office feels about the whole situation. I don't know. You guys are down there. You probably know more about how they felt about the situation with Ray Rice and what they said about Ray Rice and the front office. This, regardless of however you do it, though, if you bring in Ray Rice, you got automatically, before you even get started, an off-the-field problem before you even get started. So they're going to have to put something in motion to counteract the negativity of bringing him in. So if they do go that route, they better be ready to go. Because let's be honest, women have toured, they got this issue on board. And when women want to make a stand about something, they put it to the NFL. They put it, and this issue came up big time, and that's because women got behind it. And if women get behind the situation, they got to be able to countermeasure that negative publicity that they're going to get for grabbing up this guy, and they better figure out how they're going to do it to where it's a positive spin and they don't have all the women who were involved with the uproar with Ray Rice in the first place be all set. And then one more thing to think about, this guy didn't play it down last year. He wasn't all that great before he went in there. So where is he going to be athletically in order to make those moves? So, and that is one of the things that, by the way, I'm not a great big fan of the Jameis Winston pick, and they should have went Mariota. But that's just me. But I get the understanding about the butts in the seat. So that's what I remember about the first part of the show. Good stuff, guys, and I'll keep listening. Go ahead and throw me back up on mute there, big man.
Well, before I do that, I was going to plug the special show we got going for the Revolution.
Yes.
While we're both on. Tomorrow night, myself, yourself, and the Eagle Eye Bill Cerna, the play-by-play and ultimate stat guy for the Revolution, with him on a bye, we decided to get together and kind of give a rest of the season preview. And you actually have Clinton Solomon on as well, correct?
Yeah, Clinton Solomon, I did an interview with him earlier, and also the owner of the Dodge City Law, Ricky Burtz. I got an interview. We'll do our thing, and then we'll go into those interviews at the end of the show. So good stuff coming tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Definitely so, and appreciate you being on. I've actually got Brett Reese next week for Revolution Zone, so it should be a good time. But as always, Sonny, we appreciate it, and we'll let you get back to your evening.
You got it. I'll keep listening, but I just got to go on mute. So I'll talk to you soon.
All right, we'll talk.
And, of course, that was the voice of the Revolution, Mr. Sonny Clark. And, like I said, we got the special Revolution show coming up tomorrow. It'll be live here on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, Revolution Zone that we do at Impact Media will be live Tuesday evening. Yeah, I just happened to see he was up in the call list, and we had been talking about some of these issues, so it was good to kind of have him on for a minute, give the outside perspective.
Oh, absolutely. I enjoyed talking to him. He's a very knowledgeable guy, brought up some great points, and hopefully we can get him back on here in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, of course, on the week of September 27th, when you, Reggie, and a couple others may just so happen to be out in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I can maybe try to hook you up with some of my friends down that way, and you guys can continue that discussion.
Oh, absolutely. My flight is already booked for that, so the only thing I'm lacking now is a ticket, but I'm assured that that's on the way or will happen, so you can go ahead and start making it happen, Jeremy.
Yeah, I will get you in contact with them because they are a great group of people, and unfortunately, at that point, the Revolution won't have any more games, but their entire organization will still be in the area, so maybe you guys can connect and hang out for a minute.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
But I think that's everything we got. You guys, is there anything I missed?
No, I think we were pretty thorough on this show, man. Great show, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Glad to be back. Glad to have Coach Hill back. It was good to get his great insight as always. So I think we're back rolling, guys.
Well, it was good to dispel the rumors of of you staying in Las Vegas permanently, Reggie, and the rumors that I had somehow fired you guys, and also the rumor that Coach was actually gonna take over like Chip Kelly's job or something.
Yeah, I heard a couple of those rumors about Coach possibly going out there to Raider Nation and trying to help those guys get back on track, but I guess they weren't true.
I think we started those rumors, Reggie.
Yeah, but I was pushing for it. I mean, Coach deserves to be up there. I expect fully to see him one day hoisting the Super Bowl trophy, and I'll be right next to him, having not done a thing. I know Coach Hill.
If nothing else, we keep ourselves laughing.
This is a great show, guys. I think we covered a lot of good points. I think the draft was very heavy. I want you also want to say this about the draft. It is so many guys right now that are going to be impact on these NFL teams that you have not heard of. It was so much talent out there, guys. I'm telling you, it was very, very difficult. This has been the first time in probably 5 years that the draft was that difficult to pick. I mean, as far as when the paperwork came in and the decisions had to be made, as you mentioned, Reggie, those 19 guys Atlanta picked up immediately after the draft included itself proved that that's how much talent is still out there. So don't be surprised that you might lose a seventh-round guy or even a sixth-round guy to a free agent. I mean, the talent is that good this year, guys. It's going to be one incredible summer and preseason and training camps.
Yep, definitely so. And definitely appreciate you guys being back on. It was good to get the band back together. And obviously it'll be a couple weeks forward back. We're going to keep alternating weeks the way we're doing. A bunch of fun stuff coming up next week as well with Impact Media. But for the Coach Haywood Hill and the King ATLian and Reggie Walker, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for joining us. And a special shout out to Sonny Clark for jumping in for a few minutes. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir.
It's funny because it's true.